All right, guys, welcome back to the No Laying Up podcast. Thank you for tuning in. This episode's going to be a bit different. First, we're going to debrief on the BMW Championship Pro-Am with our awesome partner from The Bachelor, Ben Higgins. Would not have expected to have had as much fun with Ben as we did. And then after that, we're going to talk with Mackenzie Hughes about his season and coming up as a young PGA Tour player and a PGA Tour winner. But first, this episode of the No Laying Up podcast is, of course, brought to you by Callaway, the number one selling driver of 2017. The Great Big Bertha Epic driver from Callaway Golf. You've heard all the rave reviews, and we're going to continue to remind you about that. And also from the PGA Tour, note that with Scratch, golf is full of strange people and strange things, and their stories make adventures in golf. Eric Anders Lang is taking viewers on another tour around the globe, searching for the craziest and most intriguing stories and personalities in the game. And season two of Adventures in Golf is pretty fascinating. So with that, let's get to the podcast.
Be the right club. Be the right club today. Yeah!
Johnny, that's better than most. How about him? That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything different?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the No Laying Up podcast. We got a little different episode this week. We've recorded with Mackenzie Hughes. This is Wednesday. We're speaking right now. We recorded him on Tuesday. You're going to hear that probably around the 20-minute mark of this, but we're going to debrief on playing the BMW Championship Pro-Am today. Myself, DJ Pyhowski, we're planning to debrief on it. And instead, we invited a guest on that, as of like a week ago, I could not have ever imagined we would be having a contestant from The Bachelor on as a guest on this podcast. Ben Higgins, though, played in our foursome today, and he was awesome. We had a great time and wanted to debrief with him. So, Ben, welcome.
Hey, I'm happy to be here. Dude. I didn't think I'd be here either, but I've made it.
Did you commit to even come this week, or when did they invite you?
That's a good question. I decided to come probably about a month ago. BMW sent me an email and reached out, and this is a dream of mine. I love playing in pro-ams. Yeah. I just love being out there, the feel, everything, and I knew I couldn't miss this tournament.
Yeah.
And so about a month ago, I decided to come, and here I am.
So what? Give people a quick update on your background, how you came. You were a contestant on The Bachelor, and then...
I was going to say, your audience is exactly the demographic that...
Well, let's start at the beginning.
Let's start at the beginning.
What's the 45-second version of it?
People probably know me best from being on The Bachelor and Bachelor. And so I was on season 20 of The Bachelor, and I guess they're going on to season 22 now. So about 2 years ago, I was The Bachelor, and ever since then, I've been trying to live my life being The Bachelor, and also trying to kind of wiggle my way into as many pro-ams as possible.
That's what I was going to say. That
might be worthwhile.
That is a circuit. I mean, there is like a mini tour of guys who go around playing the pro-ams, and I think you're kind of way in.
Yeah, yeah. I'm trying.
The dream.
I mean, I was joking. I don't know if you guys know Alfonso Ribeiro, but he is the host.
He's on the circuit.
Yeah, he's on the circuit. And that's what I keep asking him when I see him at these things. And he's a great dude. And himself and Chris Harrison, who's the host of The Bachelor, is a big time golfer. And I text these guys and I said, hey, like, how can I get involved in the stuff you're doing? Well, first off, you need a career in entertainment, which I don't have, but they do have. So, you know, now I have my own podcast, and I'm kind of doing my own stuff. And so I'm trying to get my way into getting on the circuit. I need to play better than I play the day, but hey, I'm still fighting.
So we got paired with Brian Urlacher, and so how it worked was, it was myself, you, and Brian Urlacher were a threesome. Then we had a drawings party Monday evening at Wrigley Field, which was just incredible. But you guys both missed it, and so I had a lot of pressure on me. I'd never met either of you guys, and I got to come up with, A, I got to feel like I got to bring good luck to the drawing, and B, I got to choose a good pairing and a good time. And I had Rahm in my top five of guys I would have chosen.
Of course.
And he fell. I had like the 17th draw, and he fell all the way to 17. I took him immediately. What'd you think of playing with John Rahm today?
I was so impressed with John. Honestly, I mean, he's a young kid on tour. I'm a big fan of him. I watched him from the national championship throughout his tour career so far, which is a short one. But he was nothing but great to us, I thought. I mean, he was helping us read putts. He was helping out my swing. He and his caddy, Adam, they were both, you know, helping me out with my swing and my approach shots. And they made this day better, which is, I think, really maybe the pro's only responsibility is to help enhance the day at any level. And they definitely went beyond what they had to do.
Because they don't even have that responsibility. Their responsibility is to play in it.
Just honestly. To play, really?
I've heard stories of, like, I won't name names, but, you know, the amateurs are in a group and they call into their sponsor or whatever and say, look, this guy hasn't talked to us, like, for the entire hole. Can you do something about this? And they come out and talk to the pro and say, you know, can you engage? And they're like, nope, I'm not getting paid to talk to them. I'm being paid to play in this. It's not a guarantee. So yeah. I think we hit the jackpot, personally.
Read the fine print.
We really,
That guy's poured over the contract.
No, you're right. I mean, we hit the jackpot today. I mean, if that's not their responsibility, I just think then it's extremely kind of the guys. Like, I mean, I played with Kevin Kisner, played with Zach Johnson, and I've played with John Rahm, and all three of them have been great to me in these events. But John, definitely today, I was just impressed with. I had a blast with him.
Yeah, it was fun. Such a relaxed.
It was like
atmosphere.
Playing with four, you know, three buddies. Exactly. So
a couple holes in, you kind of forget that you're playing with a pro. I mean, he goes back to his tee boxes, and then
except when he outdrives me by 40 yards. Yeah. When he tees off 40 yards behind me.
That
but
hurt
yeah,
a little
that,
bit.
Other than that,
that
yeah,
did hurt a couple times. But what was and Brian Urlacher, man, that guy was a revelation. I mean, I mean, people love that guy in the city. He runs the city essentially. But man, it was like a buddy I've known forever. I felt like.
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of worried, right? I mean, I've watched this guy growing up, and he's one of the toughest dudes I've ever seen play football. So when I heard I'm playing with him, I'm excited about it. But I'm also, you know, I don't want to come out here today and have, you know, some super strict, tight dude playing golf with me. But he was awesome, laid back, having fun, making jokes the whole time. And people around here love him.
Oh, man.
That's a big thing. Is you hit a shot to about 4 foot from, I don't know, 160 yards out. Urlacher hit a shot to about 13 foot from 30 yards out. And the crowd goes wild, and you don't even get a clap.
No, I could not get a clap to save my life today.
So, but yeah, they love him around here, and they should. Yeah. You can tell why he's so likable and so loved.
The thing is, it sounds like a cliche, I know, but Chris and I were talking about it before. He's so good. I was keeping track. Every single person that asked for a photo, autograph, anything. Mm-hmm. I mean, he would walk across the fairway if someone shouted to him to take care of him. It just... the kind of guy that you always hope people are going to be during pro-ams.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he was totally... He, if anyone's driven around Chicago in the last 4 or 5 years, you've seen all the hair billboards.
Yeah.
He put up with all the jokes and all the comments from everybody.
He was good-natured about it because I was like... somebody finally asked him about the hair, and I was like, is that on display?
Yeah.
It's like, funny guy.
Uh-huh.
No, he was awesome. I just... I don't know. Again, you don't know what you're going to get with a guy like that. I mean, he could be... you know, just there to play the golf, but we had a blast when we talked about playing more golf when we were done, and that was like a dream foursome.
Let's talk about the start. Let's talk about Solly's game.
Oh God,
coming out of the gates.
Hey, it was early. It was very early. Let's give him
7:10 tee time.
Yeah,
I feel like we'd put in all the prep though.
Put a lot of prep in. It didn't go great for about 6 holes. I forget when it turned, but yeah, 6 holes. I think I lost 4 balls in the first 6 holes. First of all, it's a pro-am, though.
Yeah.
Par's your friend. You can't do worse than par.
No.
You're not going to get up there and start hitting irons off tee. I mean, some of the holes are 350 yards, but you can't be that guy that hits iron in a pro-am. So we're just cramming drivers down places that they shouldn't probably go. And yeah, we had our moments, though.
I mean, we shined at times. Yeah. I thought
when the track man came on, you turned
the
light switch.
The track man, the track man, everybody out there probably knows what track man is, but when the track man was measuring my swing speed, I felt like my game took a step up.
Yeah.
John actually looked at me and he said, what do you have to lose? Like, you're not hitting your driver well today. Swing for it.
Yeah.
And I did. Yeah. I went after it. And it was the best shot I hit all day.
114 mile an hour club head speed.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. I bombed. It will be my claim to fame that I outdrove Urlacher by about 5 yards on a hole.
There you go. You got him.
That's a big deal for me.
You got him. We turned it around, though.
Oh, huge. Yeah, it was great. Played great coming back in.
I think I made 5 birdies between 8 and 18.
You scrambled to make the cut, I think.
I think
you got it back together to make the cut.
I was going
to
say, man, you alone might have pulled us to be competitive in this event. You did. I mean, I don't think we were paying attention as close as we should have because we were just having a good time.
Yeah.
But you might have gone on a birdie brigade.
Well, so but with so what's your handicap? Seven?
Seven.
Seven. And Brian was a six, I think, mm-hmm. or eight. Or he was close to that, and I'm like a two. So in these, we are at a horrible disadvantage. I mean, there's I
when think, the winning score is 2,500, right. It's going to be Gretzky, hard to do it with, yeah. with those handicaps.
The group behind us, I think he was getting 16. And somebody said he made like three birdies.
Especially when Wayne Gretzky is an eight handicap at his club.
Is he really?
I mean, he's not far from it. I've been to Sherwood before.
Probably plays 200 rounds a year.
Yeah. So a 16 was a very generous handicap for him today.
Well, this morning in the pavilion, again, it's like 6:30 in the morning, and I see Brian there, and I've never met him, so I just was like, hey. He's talking to somebody, and I walked right up to him, whoever he was talking to, just, hey, real quick, I'm your pro-am partner today. I'll see you out on the range. And, then he's like, oh, he stops to like, talk to me and be nice to me, and then he introduces me to the guy he's talking to, and I turn to Wayne Gretzky.
Oh, nice, yeah.
And Wayne was not that thrilled that I just butted into the conversation. No. I felt really bad about it afterwards. I was just trying to pop in and be like, hey, you know, we're going to go out to the range. And so that part was pretty embarrassing, but... Man, what a day. That was an absolute blast. I've never had, I don't know, I've got to play in one pro-am before, but this was just blew it away. I mean,
you got to look around at times like this, and it can happen to anybody, right? Pro-ams are awesome. They're open to the public. Yep. I mean, they're expensive. I don't think any pro-am is not expensive, but on days like today's, I do feel very lucky for everything that's brought me to this point. You were asking me, what's the best thing? DJ, you were asking me, what's the best thing that happened to you post-bachelor? I said, I get to do stuff like this.
Right.
I mean, there's been a lot of up and down through this whole thing, but the cool part is I look around and Wayne Gretzky's teeing off behind me. You know, John Rahm and I are standing on the tee box together. I'm meeting a ton of new people, and Brian Urlacher and I are walking down the fairway. Like, this isn't a bad life. Like, this is pretty good.
And then now the No Laying Up podcast.
And now I'm on the No Laying Up podcast.
You're streaking.
Yeah.
I'm on a heater.
Yeah, and have you told all your listeners where you do this at this week? In a hotel room. Your studio is about as luxurious as you can get.
Yeah.
We'll tweet a photo. It's
good. This is not a cleaned up, shiny hotel room either.
This is good.
How I live.
Exactly. Yes, this is the icing on the cake.
Exactly.
So what, you know, it kind of blew me away. We were talking a bit earlier, but I... like wholly unfamiliar with The Bachelor.
Mm-hmm.
So same with me. We two guys that don't watch The Bachelor.
And so, you know, it kind of blows me away that you go from pretty much total obscurity to kind of where you are now. And, you know, you told me a little bit about earlier, but I just kind of recap a little bit of that.
Yeah. You mean you really do? Yeah, you know, you go from being a software salesman. That's what I was, at least, or you anything.
Currently am still.
Currently am a software salesman. To
probably help sales.
Yeah. Well, you would think.
Sales are good.
But and all of a sudden you're on a show that 9 million people watch. And you don't realize it when you're on the show. It really happens. I was telling you, DJ, like when you get off the show, then all of a sudden you start to realize that people recognize you and ask about, you know, your life, and they care about your relationships, and you go from 0 to 100. And I think that's why so many people that are part of the franchise kind of get overwhelmed with the attention. And I know I did, you know, right away you're confused at why everybody cares so much, and you just kind of want to separate yourself from it, but you can't.
It's kind of like you get to a point of no return.
I mean, exactly.
And once you're there, there's no turning back.
There's no turning back. And then, you know, for me, they offered me to be The Bachelor. And once they offered me to be The Bachelor, I don't want to turn that down for obvious reasons. Not only is it a great step in my life, I was ready to find somebody, but it's a good opportunity because life kind of enhances from that most of the time. And it's experience that I would have never been able to get without saying yes to it. And so I'm already a little overwhelmed from being on The Bachelorette. And then I say yes to being The Bachelor, and the whole focus is on you. The whole franchise is really resting on The Bachelor or Bachelorette's shoulders for, right. You know, 6 months of their life.
It's a lot of pressure. I
mean, yeah.
I imagine with, again, how many people are watching it and you being the center of it. And it's not, I mean, we talked a bit about how they film it and all mm-hmm. that stuff. It's just, as you would imagine, not how it looks on TV.
No. And it's tough. I mean, it is. It's a tough experience, but it's a good one. You can make it the best. My buddy, who is the host of the show, who is a great guy, and I hope you guys can talk to him sometime. He's just a really solid
fan,
dude.
Right?
Yeah, huge golfer. He told me, he said, hey, use this whole experience not to change your life, but to enhance the life you've already had before. And that's really kind of my motto going forward in all of this is, hey, is this enhancing life or is this changing it? Days like today enhance my life.
Right.
This is a good thing. And it's kind of crazy to me, too, and it hit me again today is, you know, I'm walking down the fairway and Rahm is asking me about The Bachelor, right? Mm-hmm. Or Kyle Stanley, huge Bachelor fan, right. Good dude, great guy. But, you know, I'm getting to say hi to him. Or Zach Johnson, I play in his event every year. Like these guys that are now, like, that know who I am. And they want to ask me about something, yeah. Right? Before, if I would have played a pro, I would have been like chasing them.
Right.
Hey, can I touch your clubs? but now they're asking me about, you know, do I eat dinner on the dates during The Bachelor? Like, yeah. It makes life really fun for me. We're having a good time.
That was Rahm's one question. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So Urlacher's questions cannot be repeated on here.
No, Urlacher cared about things that Rahm cared about the food.
Yeah, Rahm's like, man, my girlfriend makes me watch it. And he's like, yeah, do you eat the actual food?
Yeah,
it's so funny.
It's the best. Yeah,
the
yes.
Timing of it was perfect because Urlacher was like, "Yeah, we're gonna need some answers to some of these questions."
It's all good. It makes it more fun for me when I feel like people actually kind of care about my life a little bit.
So, what's your background in golf, by the way?
Yeah, so I played golf has a huge place in my heart, actually. So I played from the time I was a little kid, so about 5 years old to the time I was like 13, and I wasn't bad. I wasn't great, but I was a good little golfer. And I stopped playing for about 6 years, and then I was a decent football player. And I blew out my knee during a football game. And at that moment, football was done for me. Right in high school, I wasn't going to get back. And so I picked up golf again for the first time. So I played my last 2 years of high school, I guess 18 and 19. So about 5 years I took off, but 18 and 19, I finished out high school playing golf, and I haven't really stopped. And I guess when I need my competitive bug or I want to go out with my buddies and play around, this is what I do now.
It's a game for life.
It's a game for life, and that's what
Everything
it became.
Comes back to golf, man.
Exactly.
Urlacher finished his round today and was like, I'm going to go play more over at Merritt Club today. And he's like, retired NFL player, like, that's what I'm going to do is play golf now.
Yeah.
That's what people do. Everything comes back to golf in some way.
You're right.
How closely do you follow the game, and kind of who are your guys you like following? What's kind of your fans' perspective on it?
Yeah, I follow the game very close. I'm realizing now over the last year and a half, my knowledge of the game is not as good as I'd like it to be. Right, so
tune in here.
Yeah, I got to listen more. So I've been kind of investing myself into learning more about the ins and outs of the game. I've always just been kind of a fan. I've watched, you know, golf tournaments to figure out who they are. But I love the guys, a lot of the guys I've met. That's the cool part about the tour is I think once you meet these guys, you like them more most of the time, right? I mean, these guys, we were talking about today, the guys that you see on TV and the personalities they display on TV are probably the guys that you know behind the scenes, right? So like your Fowlers and your Zach Johnsons and Spieths and now Rahm and Kyle Stanley's, like those guys are and Kisner's, like those guys are guys I love watching and cheering for them because I just like who they are.
They're just normal people.
They're just normal people who
almost
can.
All of them are just normal dudes.
It's so great.
Almost all of them.
Almost all of them.
All,
some
not
are
all.
Terrible.
No,
some
the,
are terrible.
Unnamed ones that call me out today. I had a funny story. I walked in the locker room before a round today, and there's these big massage tables laying on the locker room, right? All over the locker room because the pros and the amateurs were sharing one together. And I said, oh, and there's this guy face down on one of the massage tables with a dude rubbing his back. And some of these pro-ams, you actually can get a massage before you're around. They'll stretch you out for you. And I said, hey, oh.
If you're on the circuit.
If you're, yeah. They said,
get your card.
I said, are you guys giving out massages? And I was serious. And the guy that was giving the massage looked at me and goes, yeah, to the pros. And then the guy looked off all the tables, Jason Day, and he just laughed. And I put my head down and walked out the door. I was totally embarrassed. All I wanted was a little back rub.
Roasted.
Yeah. Roasted. But no, these guys are great. It's fun to kind of be around this.
So we talked a bit about what you're kind of transitioning into with, mm-hmm. you know, you're taking kind of what your influence that you have in social media space to kind of take on a new project now, huh?
Definitely, man. Thanks for asking about that. Yeah. Kind of going back to the enhanced life theory, I have been in software sales for a long time, but I've also been involved in a nonprofit called Humanity and Hope United out of Honduras for 7 years. And one of the things that I'm doing right now, and I'm about a month away from launching, we've been working on it since January, is we're starting a company where we're purchasing products from third world countries, bringing them to the United States, selling them here in the United States, and then giving profits back to some nonprofits and social issues or causes that we believe are sustainably changing the issue at hand. And so I'm hoping that becomes something I can get more focused on as time goes on. So
Good stuff.
Right now we're starting with coffee. So in a month, we've purchased our first coffee from Honduras. We'll be selling coffee and selling it here in the U.S. I'm pumped about it, not only for the future at which it can help out, but just it's a passion project for me.
I can relate to that.
Yeah, I'm sure you can, man.
So that's awesome. As soon as you told us that today, we were like, yes, go for it. Do it.
Yeah.
You have some questions that DJ...
So we were, like I said, we were struggling on the Bachelor front, so I called in, you know, the big righty, Graham Shirley, friend of the pod, and he texted me probably 1,000 words about his Bachelor experience, he's, I can't believe you're talking to him. Here's all the things I want to ask. I'm going to try to whittle it down here. He was sitting in traffic, just like pulled over to the side of the road, just firing off questions.
He is committed.
He's so
committed.
This
is the thing. The funniest part about The Bachelor, and I don't care who, to all your listeners, and you were talking earlier, you love your listeners. I don't care who you are. You can tell me you don't watch a show, but it's just like the kind of the Urlacher treatment, right? Hey, my wife makes me watch the show. And then you're like, oh, cool, that's fine. And then two holes later, you're like, yeah, but tell me about this. And you're like, you watch the show more than you want to lead on. You like this, don't you? So there's got to be some of your listeners out there that kind of like this.
I'm sure. Go.
So we'll start with the easy ones. How long are the rose ceremonies?
That's a good question. So you start out the first night, and the first one takes about 4 hours. As you go on, there's less people and there's less cameras, so it's less and less time. So I'd say the last, or maybe if you have four people left, it's probably going to take a good 45 minutes. And a lot of that is just kind of moving of cameras and stuff.
How much do the producers kind of influence the final picks each week?
You know, it's always a question I think people want to assume happens, right? Because the show's so crazy. But I've always said this, if you get 30 people in a house competing for one person and there's alcohol and food and that's about it,
people stop being polite. People start being real.
Yeah, yeah. People stop being polite and start getting real. And so they go crazy, man. And so the producers don't influence decisions too much. They more kind of have this like, they just know everything going on. And so they kind of have this like almost God type view of the world. Yeah, yeah. So you make a decision and they kind of all giggle at you and you're like, oh no. Yeah. But they really don't. I mean, for the most part, if you see a bachelor or bachelorette really truly mess up, which I kind of did on my season, it's probably their decision and their fault.
He says, how awkward are the shirtless montages they film of you almost every episode?
Well, for some of the bachelors, it's probably not very awkward at all because those guys are jacked. But I had to like cut out cheese and carbs and alcohol for like 3 weeks just to get prepared for it because I knew those
just
were coming.
Advance.
Just to advance. And so I was just trying to prepare myself to look decent. And so every time they would have one, this is a little behind the scenes stuff. It's a little embarrassing also. I would ask them, and we got to a close enough relationship and said, okay, if you're going to film me shirtless, give me 5 minutes and I'll go do the pump pushes. I'd pound out about 40 pushups as fast as I could.
Yes. Well, I did that on the first team.
Let myself swell up a bit. And then we're good to go. Yeah, then we're feeling confident.
All right, I don't even know what this means. Why on earth did he give us the impression that he fell for both JoJo and Lauren B, aka Lauren Bay?
This guy really does care a lot, doesn't he? Yeah, he really cares. So that was kind of my biggest mess up, what I was talking about. I did care for them both. And I think I will never get on a bachelor or bachelorette during the show who likes more than one person, right? I mean, it's bound to happen. You have 26 beautiful, cool, great people that you're investing in a relationship in. My issue was I communicated that to both pretty openly towards the end. You know, why did I do that? Because I felt like it was the right thing to do. Honestly, I thought, you know, hey, even if I let one of them go, I need to tell them how I felt so they know that this wasn't illegitimate or this wasn't a fake relationship, that they know that I really did care and I was willing to tell them that. Now, looking back, it probably didn't matter if I did or not. They don't care that. But that was my thought process. And again, that's one of those decisions that afterwards the producers probably go, oh, man, you're in for a good one here. But I did it. And I can't regret it. I don't want to take it back. I don't really want to apologize for it. But I would say that if I had to do over, I probably wouldn't do the same way.
All right, Graham, hopefully that helps. You know, I'm sure if you got any more, just call, yeah, just call Ben, and he, yeah, Ben would love to keep talking about it. Just give him a call on his cell phone. He'll talk about it.
I'm not going to lie, man. Going into it, I did not know who you were, knew nothing about it. And they're like, yeah, you're playing with a guy from The Bachelor. I was kind of like, okay, that might be weird, but man, you were awesome today. That was an absolute blast. Glad to have you on. And, yeah, we'll have to play some golf. We'll have to hit you up if we're ever in Denver, and we'll play some golf.
I would love that. Yeah,
please. We need to wrap with the mainstay question. When was the last time you paid for golf?
Oh, wow. Oh, I pay for golf every round.
Oh.
Yeah, so that's
not on the circuit.
I'm not on the circuit. So I don't know what clubs listen to you, but this is my moment to shine. I love golf. I like to use my Instagram.
That's what I was going to say. You have a million Instagram followers. You should be able to do whatever you want.
I can tweet fairly well. So if any golf people are out there listening, please reach out to me, because I would love to hit the ball around with you. So yeah, I do. I pay for golf almost every round now.
All right. Well, once you make it on the circuit, that'll probably change. Ben Higgins, thanks for joining me.
Hey, thanks, guys.
Thanks for a fun day, and we'll speak soon.
Appreciate it.
All right, thanks a lot to Ben for joining us. That was a lot of fun. We're going to get to Mackenzie Hughes shortly. But again, want to check in to remind you guys a few things about the Great Big Bertha Epic Driver from Callaway. Between the club reviews, the industry awards, the tour pros, and the golfers like myself and you, it seems like everyone cannot stop raving about the Epic Driver. I know anytime I put it in somebody's hands and they try it during a round, they rave about it. Actually, during this Pro-Am, they had some TrackMan data on us. Got up to 169 miles an hour ball speed and a 1.49 smash factor. I don't know what either of those mean, but people tell me those are good things. And I know that this driver is putting the ball in places that I've never been in on golf courses before, and might have even got a smattering of applause on a couple of those shots. So you can customize your driver at CallawayGolf.com. Swing on by. Check out all the 8 different color options you have with it. I promise you, again, just try the Callaway Epic Driver, and there's a 0% chance you're going to be disappointing. Now let's get to Mackenzie Hughes. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the No Laying Up Podcast. We're here at the BMW Championship, joined technically for the second time on the podcast by Mackenzie Hughes. Mackenzie, how are we doing?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
How does it feel with all this professional equipment this time? Last time you were on...
This is pretty legit.
We actually just recorded it on a cell phone.
Now I can sort of verify for you guys now. Before I was like, these guys are kind of sketch. No, I'm just kidding.
No, it's accurate. That's very accurate.
No, this is pretty sweet.
Good. Well, first I want to touch on when we did talk at the Players. It was kind of, we did a bunch of first time interviews. It was first timers that were playing the Players for the first time.
Yeah.
We didn't know who was walking in the door next. We had no time to prepare. And if you did happen to listen to that one, we may recover some topics, but we're kind of going to start from scratch. So first time here at the BMW Championship for you, had you ever seen Conway Farms before this week?
I had not seen Conway Farms before this week. We played here in college with Kent State. We played tons of great courses around here, North Shore, Skokie. Never played Conway. Never got to play it in the Western. I was a year after, I think 2009, they had the Western. So I never played Conway, but heard so many good things. I've played the course now, love it. It's, the course in Chicago here just—it's
unbelievable.
It's like crazy.
You can't.
It might
play
be
all
like
of
some
them.
Of the best in the world. Like just so close together and just so many great ones. So yeah,
I lived here for 6 years, and everyone's like, "Oh, have you played here?" I'm like, I've never even heard of that place. Then you go look it up. I'm like, "All right, I got to go play that one." So
yeah,
a lot of them are private, and not necessarily everyone listening is able to access.
Yeah.
When I lived here, I did not have access to any of these courses. But man, it's
but now here. You can just walk on to any of them.
It's not what I said. It's not what I said. People are kind enough to send some invites now, but
this kind of segues into a question we talked about yesterday. We wanted to kick off some podcasts with a question: when was the last time you paid for golf?
It's a good one.
So it's been a while. I think last year, so I was staying in Hilton Head with my grandparents at like a timeshare, and you know, I'm going out to this resort and I'm playing on the web.com at this point. This is the spring of 2016. And it's always uncomfortable going into a pro shop when they don't really know you, but you're kind of hoping to get a free round of golf. And you're just like, so this is my name. I play on the web.com tour. You probably don't know me, but can I play for free? And you're like, you don't say, can I play for free? But you're kind of just like, can you like,
you work around it.
Yeah. You're just like, you know, how's it looking out there? And they're like, yeah, it's a $35 cart fee. And I'm like, all right, sure. So I paid like $70 for two carts for my grandparents and myself and my wife, and that was probably the last time. And like before that, it hadn't been like for a long, long time. And it's just uncomfortable because even when I call it to places now, I don't like getting like just handouts. I don't want people to just be like, oh, you're on the tour, like, and expect to play for free. But I just, yeah, I call out and I'm just like, hey, how's it look? You know, could I come out and, you know, play a few holes today? And I guess it's sort of becoming a little bit more normal, but still feel weird doing it.
I think it's worth the club. It's not worth for the club, whatever it is, to charge whatever the guest fee or whatever it is. You know what I mean? I don't know. It's kind of weird. I know what you mean. Exact space of, like, you don't want to be like, can I come play for free? But
yeah,
it's all kind of awkward little, is this taken care of?
It is. And even when I say, yeah, sure, come on out, and you're still just like, so is it free? If I'm going to drive 30 minutes, I need to know. I mean,
but it's got to be less of a concern now that you're a PGA Tour winner.
I was going to say, I would start every conversation over the phone or whatever with, just, yeah, this is a PGA Tour winner, Mackenzie Hughes. just, you know, curious how it looks out there.
I haven't pulled that one yet.
You don't want to pull that one. That one gets around quickly.
Yeah.
This dude called up. You won't believe what he said.
No, I've had pretty good success around Charlotte for the most part. So, you know, and hopefully just try and keep playing well. And I'll have to tell them, who I am next time.
Is it weird now, say, like, so now that you're, you know, you play on the tour, you've won on the tour, you're 31 on the FedEx Cup, I think, sitting right now. So there's a certain, you probably don't necessarily get recognized everywhere you go, but when you go somewhere golf related, people will kind of, you know, say blah, blah, blah. So I always, you know, if I have a caddy that has caddied for a pro or something, they always like talk about how much the guy tipped and was he cool and stuff. Is it weird to kind of think anywhere you go, somebody's going to say something about whatever you've done? You're from Canada, so you're nice, obviously, but so it may not even enter your mind. But do you ever think about, it's like, all right, I got to make sure I'm like tipping this guy enough or things like that?
Yeah, no, that's a huge part of it. And it's like, you want to have a good reputation where you go and the places that you visit. And even when you just like, you know, if I walk by, you know, a bunch of kids, like today, you know, I'm playing a practice round, and from the second green to the third tee, you kind of walk through this patio area, and like to my right, there's like 30 kids kind of hoping to get an autograph, but I'm playing as a single ahead of three guys behind me. So if I stop and sign for 30 kids, you know, all of a sudden I backed up guys behind me, and I'm like, well, I can't really sign. So I just kind of turning to the left and walking that way, and you feel guilty doing it, and you just like, you think, you hope that people don't think, oh, that guy's a dick, he just walked right by us and is not signing.
Right.
But it's so hard, and I can't even imagine what Ricky and Jordan and those guys go through, because they have to do that so many times in the day, and there's just
can't
no way around
it.
But you just have to, if you want to get stuff done, you have to avoid that at times. And, you know, I'm learning that more and more, and it's not a problem for me, but I still feel bad, you know, as a Canadian, you know, leaving one autograph unsigned out there, and I'm just like, ah. That guy probably hates me, but, you know, nothing you can do.
This is probably kind of a cliche question, but does that get turned up to just 11 during the Canadian Open week? Is it much different, or is it?
Yeah, no, I mean, we actually, when we're in Canada, us Canadian players probably feel like, you know, Ricky and Jordan on a regular week, you know, we're actually noticed, and, you know, we kind of, it's unfamiliar territory for me, you know, going to the Canadian Open and being one of the, like, you know, featured players, like coming there this year, especially as a winner on the PGA Tour, and it had a different feel this time around than I've played in some past Canadian Opens, and it's a lot of fun, but you also wouldn't want to play like 20 Canadian Opens in a year, because it takes a lot out of you. And again, hats off to the guys that, you know, week in, week out are, you know, celebrities every week, everywhere they go, that's what they're dealing with. And I mean, I'm sure you, over time, it would just become business and just clockwork, but it is, you know, a big added element to a tournament.
Add in, like, sponsor stuff, too. I
mean, yeah.
The more you are recognized by fans, the more sponsors you have, the more asks, like, the tour has of you. And even I I don't know. I've gotten to know some of you guys and don't feel as bad about making asks. But then when you think about them, sometimes I'm like, man, he probably got like 10 some of these. Like, hey, can you do this for us for 2 seconds? Can you do this, this, and this? Do you see that increasing at all? Or is that still something you're kind of getting used to? Or
yeah, it's definitely increasing. And, you know, I guess you try and find the right opportunities. And, you know, if you feel like it's going to be like fun and, you enjoy like being with the guys that you're, you know, doing interviews with, it makes it a lot easier. So you guys, obviously, yeah, you guys are just feeling it today. But yeah, no, it's that stuff is growing. And then, I mean,
it's a good thing.
Yeah. It's a good thing. Yeah. Like you just like now I'm playing the pro-ams now, like for the playoffs, like, you know, pro-ams are pro-ams, mm-hmm. but they're great. They're great. Right. I mean, you want to be in the pro-am. Yeah,
right. If you probably don't want to play in the pro-am, but you don't want to not get selected to play in the pro-am.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, I'm learning to, you know, obviously the pro-ams are a huge part of the tour, and it's a huge, like, value for sponsors and whatnot. And I understand that. And, you know, I go out there and try and do my best to entertain and be a lot of fun for my playing partners. And at the same time, you have to try and make that into a mini practice round, right? You need to, yeah, you know, still work out there, get some stuff done. Because if you're out there 5 hours and you're just, you know, just entertaining, I mean, then it's not quite, you're not getting your return on that as well. Right. So you just have to make sure that you're, you know, slightly selfish on the golf course. Like, it just take a minute, you know, on a hole and just say, okay, I'm gonna write some notes down or whatnot. But yeah, it's, again, there's
those guys are gonna, their buddies are going to ask them, well, who'd you play with? Oh, Mackenzie Hughes. What's he like? Well, I mean, he was just practicing on his own the whole time, and you can't have that.
So yeah. Yeah. You can't be, balance. Yeah. You can't be totally ISO, but yeah, you got to find that right balance, and I'm trying to figure that out.
Yeah. So I know I do remember in that first pod we did, we talked a little bit about your past and how you got to the tour. You're from Ontario. You went to Kent State. First question I have though about growing up in Ontario, I've always been blown away by people from the North, how they become essentially masters at golf, how you master golf in a climate like that. I mean, were you traveling during the winters and stuff to play in other areas, or what did you do in the winters in Canada?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a great answer, but I mean, I didn't travel south when I was 15, 16, 17. I wasn't, you know, going down to Florida, Myrtle Beach, all that. I mean, I wasn't really doing that on a regular basis. Maybe once or twice in a winter, you might go down for a few days at a time and go practice and play. But, you know, I wasn't going to any academies or, you know, the Ledbetters, you know, yeah, school and all that stuff. I mean, I'd play, you know, as much as I could when it was nice weather in Ontario. And then when the weather turned, you know, I was hitting balls indoors, or, you know, then I shifted my attention to sports in high school that I was playing. Maybe it was like volleyball or basketball that I was playing, but, you know, I wasn't really doing much golf in the winter. So it's hard to really explain why we become any good.
You could say masters. I said masters. Masters. I mean, like, essentially, yeah. But that's what I mean.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, because, yeah, I put my clubs down for, I don't know, 4 months, you know, and pick them up periodically. And then in the spring, you just start playing again. And you're like, you just expect to start playing well. And you're like, now if I did that, I mean, I'd miss the ball. I don't know what I'd do. I mean, I play year round now, and if I take a week off, I get back and I'm like, you know, a deer on ice. You know, I'm just like, what do I do? Like, how do I hold this
swinging
thing?
Swinging a lawn chair.
Yeah. So it's really weird, but when you don't know anything else, it's just normal. Yeah. So I think that's probably the biggest thing, is that we don't know anything else. And if you go from, like, if I had, you know, lived my life from 0 to 18 in Florida, and then, you know, did a repeat and did 0 to 18 in Ontario, and I was like, well, what do I do in the winter now? Like, you know, I can't play 24/7, you know, 365. No, you can't. And so, but yeah, I think it just comes down to not knowing anything else, and then just, you know, putting your head down, going to work in the summer.
Kind of maybe saves you from burnout too.
Oh, I think it's huge. I mean, even now, you know, I've looked at going down to Florida, but I still like being in Charlotte because, you know, we get that change in season. And then in the winter, I don't really feel obligated when it's 40 degrees and, you know, raining sideways to go outside and grind. So I'll get my time off in the winter and kind of hit the refresh button. And yeah, I think it's really nice not to be in it all the time.
So how did you end up at Kent State?
Herb Page, you know, that was probably the main reason. You know, him being from near Toronto, that was a big pull. And I knew some guys there before I got there. And so I wanted to, I mean, that made it a lot easier to pick that school, knowing that I was going to know a few guys there. And then I almost went to Penn State, and, you know, that would have been fine too, I'm sure. I mean, I'm sure it would have been great, but I didn't think I was going to get as masterful under those coaches. And not that they weren't great coaches, but I just knew Herb Page had produced some really great players, and I just felt that was the right path. And I mean, I have zero regrets going there. I loved every minute of it. And there were some hard times, and, like, you know, there were some times where, you know, Herb and I, you know, we had some, you know, difficult conversations and some heart to hearts when I either wasn't playing well or things weren't, you know, all rainbows and sunshine. But, you know, I think it made me a way better player. And I went into Kent State not knowing if I'd be good enough really to play professional golf, and came out thinking that I was, you know, on the right track to play professionally. So
that kind of answers a line of questioning I had there, but I asked how you end up at Kent State because you immediately answered with Herb Page, and that doesn't go like on your bio, right? It goes to Kent State. But that's what people, I think, most, myself included, or your mind is trained to wonder, like, how did he end up at that school in particular? Because, you know, it wasn't even necessarily about the school. It was, for you, it was the coach, and that's what guided you the most.
Yeah,
essentially. Not that Kent State is not somewhere you wouldn't want to go.
But yeah,
I want to know the lead factor. Some people say it's the golf course, it's the practice facilities.
And then, you know, I would say second was the practice facilities, which they had just put in like a year and a half before I got there. And it's like a $2.5 million facility that, you know, for indoor purposes and for being in Northeast Ohio is a must. And
wow, look at this recruit. He's just a recruiting plug right here.
It is so good.
I'm about the
alma mater. Go Flashes. All you top recruits out there, just take note.
Student dining is good.
Yeah. I mean, the girls, the girl to guy ratio at Kent State is, let's see, it was like a 68% female enrollment when I was at Kent State to 32% male.
My eyebrows just went vertical. Golden flashes.
All you young
golfers out there.
KSU, baby.
So after college, you went, you played the PGA Tour Canada in 2013.
Yep.
You were the Order of Merit winner there, and you went to the Web.com Tour in 2014. You made 7 out of 20 cuts that year. What is the biggest difference between you right now and you in 2014?
There's a lot that's different, but I would say first and foremost, the difference would be the confidence that I have now. Certainly my golf game has polished and improved as well, but I just got beat down a little bit. I played okay out there, and I was like, if you watched me play around a golf in 2014, you wouldn't go, oh, this guy's lost, he doesn't know what's like left and right. I hit it fine, I chip it fine, you know, and nothing was like off. I just, you know, I would shoot a lot of 70, 69, 71s, 72s, and they just weren't going anywhere on the web.com. And
because you got to go, you got to take it deep out there.
Oh yeah, and I wasn't putting well at all. And you know, now if you were to ask me what the strength of my game is, I would say it's my putting. And in 2014, you know, I putted abysmal. I was just terrible. I mean, I lost so much confidence. And week in, week out, you're, you know, trying different things, trying different putters. And I was searching way too much. And now I know what works. I know, you know, I've got two or three things I'm working on all the time, and I'm not trying to find some magical fairy dust to sprinkle on myself that'll just make me, you know, an amazing player all of a sudden. I know what works, and I stick to that and just try and just get a little bit better, you know, each and every day. But again, I just think confidence in this game is so big. And, you know, now that I've won on the web.com and the PGA Tour, and I've validated to myself that if I go out there and play really good golf, you know, I can win, no question. And I don't have to, like, wonder, well, if I'd only finished fifth on the PGA Tour, and I said, oh, yeah, am I good enough? It's good enough to win. Well, if I hadn't won yet, it's one thing to say it, but
you can always draw back on it.
Yeah,
always.
But doing it and being like, okay, yeah, I won an RSM Classic, and I know I can do that again, and that's I would say the biggest difference.
Because I mean, so 2015 essentially feels like a reset year. You went back to PGA Tour Canada, played well there. 2016, you're playing Web.com. You win on Web.com, get your tour card through that, and then you win before 2017 even comes about. Like, did that feel like just a meteoric rise of 2015? I was playing PGA Tour Canada. Now I'm a PGA Tour winner, not just on the tour, but I've won. Did that feel?
Yeah, I mean, and that's a year and a half later. I mean, yeah. From the middle of 2015 to the fall of 2016, being a PGA Tour winner. I mean, I never would have believed someone that they told me that. You know, not thinking that I couldn't do it, but just like, would it happen that fast? Probably not. And what's crazier about the 2016 season is, and this kind of gets lost a little bit, is that the first half of 2016, I kind of felt, you know, it was going similar to 2014. Like, I started out the first half of the year and I was playing good golf, but I kept finishing like 30th to 50th, and I just couldn't kind of get anything going. And I entered the, I think, 12th or 13th event of the season, the Peak and Peak web.com event, and I wasn't in the field. Went to the Monday qualifier, shot 69, didn't get in, and the next day, like, four or five, maybe even six people withdrew within the span of 24 hours, and I got in the tournament by some miracle.
Food poisoning?
I mean, I don't know what was. I mean, the runs, I don't know. And I get in the tournament Tuesday around lunch, and I go on to finish fifth for my best career web.com finish that week. And then from there, I just started snowballing some confidence, and I won 6 weeks later. And then another 8 weeks later, I went on the PGA Tour, and you're just like, where am I? What planet am I on?
Yeah.
Like, now I'm in the Masters and I'm going to Kapalua, and you're just like, wow.
Go ahead.
I know this is probably hard to answer because you do have a win, but it feels like there's something to be said for getting that win so early and just having it out of the way. It seems like you look at guys like Patrick Rogers or someone kind of comes to mind, and it's almost like, you know, being close and it almost seems like you can build up some scar tissue, and you kind of didn't even have enough time to do that on tour. I don't know if that makes sense or not.
Yeah, no, it totally does. And you look at guys that are on tour that are, you know, amazing players, and you think, they've been on tour 9-10 years and they haven't won, but they've been so close, and they're proven great players, and you're just like, how is this guy not won yet? But yeah, you're right. I mean, just the build up year after year, and it's like, oh yeah, this guy, you know, he's had 250 starts and he's, you know, had, you know, 58 top tens, and he's never, you know, cracked the door, you know, the seal on the win. And I mean, yeah, to win early, you know, not only being a rookie, just to, like, secure playing status for the next couple of years.
There's,
you know,
no better time of year to win, honestly, than when you did.
No. I mean
you get that exemption for 2 years after that season ends.
Yeah, I mean, not only you're playing your rookie season, you know, basically stress free now the rest of the way. And now you say that, but it's like, you still want to play great golf. Yeah. You don't just go out there and, like, you know, start going for it from 295 yards over water. But yeah, so you just, like, that part of it, you know, and then the 2 years after that. And then, yeah, it's just those guys, though. I mean, yeah, you're right. I can't imagine carrying that weight around, you know, 5, 6, 7 years down the road and being like, I know I'm good enough, but I've been so close so many times I haven't closed a deal. And then it just creeps into your mind. And so
just look at the playoff you're in, though. I mean, there's five of you guys, yeah, right? And you went from being on the, as of Monday, I think there were four of you left at that point. You're at, yep, probably the biggest disadvantage before your putt from off the green. You hold a par putt from off the green. So you went from probably the lowest odds of the four of them to, right, winning. You make it, and then the following three guys miss putts, and Vijegas's putt was a pretty short putt.
Yeah.
I mean, you can just see how, I don't want to call that an element of luck, but the element of, oh, roll unknown, that out again. Unknown.
Like, I mean, just like, how could you have predicted that?
Right.
And like, if you were to pause time, you know, as we're all putting for par, and you had Vegas lay out odds for all four of us, I mean, my odds would have been just crap.
Right.
Like, and like, if you had the odds for me winning on that hole, I mean,
right,
you would, astronomical. You would, yeah, put a dollar to win a million. Like, it would have been just nuts. And I mean, but I told myself when I had that putt, I just said, you know what, if I can, I mean, I was like, this sucks, but if I can make this somehow, you know, all of a sudden it flips on everyone else. Like, yeah. They're just like, well, now I have to make just to, you know, to extend. And I just thought, you know what?
Hammer.
I'll make it. Throw the hammer, throw a fist bump at him, like wake him up and just be like, I'm here, you know, I'm in with par. Let's see what you got. And I mean, it worked out and I never in a million years would have thought that was going to happen.
Yeah.
And I literally thought there would be two guys make it, at least one, and I'd be going to 18, right? And yeah, I guess you can call it good fortune, yeah, whatever you want to call it.
But it's just so many of these, I mean, guys like Charles Howell, I think he has something like 26 or 27 top three finishes on tour.
That guy has two wins.
He's a machine.
That guy has made $35 million, something like that.
Yeah, and he hit a perfect putt to win at Quicken Loans last year, and it just fell low. Like, it barely fell low, and it just, again, that's those thin margins, just, yeah.
Well, how about the year at the Buick? Or I don't know what it would have been called back then when he hit
San
the
Diego. Torrey.
Hit the pin on the 72nd hole with a wedge, goes back in the water, and you're like, oh,
relatable problem,
aim right? Like, yeah. don't hit it so good. Like, I mean, that's just stuff that you just can't predict, and
yeah.
Golf is just weird that way.
It's amazing. Did you ever, you know, in that time when you were playing Webb and PGA Tour Canada, did you ever feel? I always try to illustrate as best I can how many guys there are at that level. I mean, you look back at, you know, you have the tour group, which is a small-ish group in relation. You have the, like, the Web group, which is still relatively small. And then you get to that PGA Tour Latino America, Canada group, and that mini tour-ish group worldwide. I don't know a way to illustrate exactly how many guys are in that group. Did you ever feel like you were potentially going to blend into that pack and not be able to make it out of it? Or while you were there, were you like, I have something that these guys necessarily don't have? It's okay. Yeah. That's not too braggy to say that. Like, I mean, clearly do have it.
Yeah, even when I was struggling, I still thought that, you know, I had something mentally that I think other guys didn't. And, you know, I just think sometimes it's the willingness to do stuff that other guys aren't doing. And I still had that even when I wasn't playing that well. And I just thought if I kept doing the right things, I just thought that there was going to be a time where it would just break out. But there were times where I literally wanted to quit. I mean, there were times that, you know, golf just seems to like constantly beat you down. And I had a couple of years there where, you know, it was beating me down pretty hard. And I'm like, you know, maybe it's not for me. Maybe it's just not going to happen. But then, like, literally I had those thoughts and like a month and a half later, you know, I'm like charging on a web.com tour and I win. And then, you know, 2 months later I went on the PGA tour. So like to go from where like the darkest of darkest points in my playing career to like 6 months later, I'm like, well, let's go.
I've got it.
Let's just go try down my Noe Lane.
When things are dark like that, what's going wrong or what's kind of the,
I think, you know, sometimes it's just like compounding your, like sometimes you get so down on yourself and then like you just, it feels like every bad bounce you can get goes the wrong way. Like it just creeps in the water. It, you know, hits the lip of the bunker and rolls back in and instead of bouncing forward. And I think you almost like can't get over how like it's going. You're just like, can't get over that hump and be like, I'm going to just remain positive. It just like it keeps beating you down. And I think you just get more and more negative, and I don't know, it's super hard to climb out of those funks. And I think, you know, it's really important having people around you that can lift you up, because if you're doing it alone and just, you know, trying to find a way out yourself, it's really hard. And I mean, man, what a hard game. I mean, I can think back to so many times where I'm just like, I don't know, like, when I'm going to start playing well again, or it's like, I'm playing fine, but why am I not shooting like 68? I'm shooting 71 or 72. And it's like one shot or, you know, one momentum swinging around where it's like, if I could just make this 8-footer for par, maybe it changes the outlook of my day, and you miss it and you're just like, oh, fuck, here we go again, you know? And so I think, you know, a lot of it's just mindset and being able to like really keep your head in the game. I think sometimes it's so easy just to like, not pack it in, but you're just like, well, you know, yeah, that's going to be a bad bounce, or, you know, if it's like on the fence of it, is it gonna be out of bounds or inbounds? Like, yeah, that's probably out of bounds. Like, who cares? Like, you just like, you know, you expect it to be the worst. And I think that's kind of like, you can get really dangerous when you go down that road and start getting really negative. And you just have to, you know, you have to find a way to flip that switch. And just, I mean, the only way you're gonna get out of it is if you can kind of just look at it more glass half full and like, okay, it's gonna turn around. Like, you know, I can only miss so many putts. Like, I can only, you know, shoot 71 so many times. It's like, I'm going to start getting some momentum here. So, yeah, it's...
Well, I mean, yeah, it's just funny to hear. I mean, you're 26?
Yeah.
Like, you sound like you're 36 that's been through absolute hell. Like, your struggles are, in the past, were relatively short-lived, which, I mean, some guys battle it for so much longer. That's what's so... I don't know. So it's what's pretty cool about your story. What would you say are some like some major lessons you've learned in the first full year on the PGA Tour? What's your like some of your most valuable lessons that you've learned? Last one, and we'll let you get out of here.
I think that the biggest thing I've learned, and this will, I don't want this to sound bad in any way, but just that all these guys are very human, and like before getting out on a tour, I was like, these guys are like all robots. I'm convinced. I don't miss shots.
Yeah.
I only watch them on TV, just flush it and shoot 25 under par on hard ass golf courses. And I'm like, I don't know if I can do it with these guys. And then I get out here full time, play with a lot of guys, and I see, okay, they all miss shots. They all miss putts and look very human at times. And that's not, I mean, I do the same thing, and but it's refreshing to see that it happens to everybody. And, you know, I've played with Phil and Jordan and Henrik and tons of great guys. And, like, they make mistakes. Even the top guys in the world make mistakes. And that's been really nice to see. Not in a, like, I want you to screw up kind of way, but just in that, like, okay, it doesn't have to be perfect golf. And guys are going to, you know, be human. And then it's okay for you to be human too. And so I think it gives you a bit more of an ease. Just coming out into a tournament and being like, okay, I don't need to be perfect. I just need to be good enough. And guys, you know, there's going to be mistakes. You're going to make bogeys, and that's fine. And I think that kind of eased me into my, you know, first year as playing with Phil, starting out in Napa, and he's like hitting it kind of everywhere. And you're just like,
he does that.
You know, he shot like, you know, awesome every day. I mean, he shot 68 and 69 when I played with him, and it was like, I didn't see him for half the holes, but I mean, you know, but again, it's just watching those guys. It's just, it eases your mind a little bit thinking, okay, I mean, there's some exceptional talents out here, and the top four, five, six guys in the world are, you know, probably not human 98% of the time, but they are human occasionally. And, but everyone else is human. And
that's, you know, one of the takeaways I've had too, is I've watched some of these guys, top guys, hit really bad shots sometimes, and that helps me be like, you know what, you can't get mad when you hit bad shots. These guys do it like for a living, and they are totally. So imperfect.
Totally. So I think that's why we always say, also, if you're ever going to a tournament, go watch someone play holes.
Don't necessarily watch the leader, just follow them around the
and
way
maybe,
they
maybe
around.
Go early on a Saturday and watch a guy that like just made the cut and see how you know, like, I mean,
totally.
I mean, how about 2 years ago? I mean, Tiger at Memorial when he shot like 85.
Yeah,
you know,
that was Zach Blair intimidation, though.
Yeah, CB. All right, Mackenzie, I know you got to run to dinner, but thanks for popping by. I know we've been trying to do this for a while, so appreciate you coming back on for a fuller length interview.
Enjoyed
and,
it.
Best of luck this week, and hopefully see you in Atlanta as well.
Thanks. Thanks, guys.
Get the right club. Be the right club today.
Yes! Johnny, that's better than most. How about him? That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything.